I haven't bought groceries, actually, in 4.5 years.
I'm MK Anderson, and this is First 100 Days. A podcast where we discuss the idea that if the first 100 days of a presidency are so important, they're likely to be important for anybody else's career and life moves. We'll talk to CEOs, first-time parents, startup bros, and more to discover if the first 100 days are really that important. Today, we're speaking with Connor Haney, a writer, lyricist, composer at Netflix. With television program changing so drastically and more people watching shows on streaming services, I am so excited to speak with him about all that's involved around the first 100 days of writing a Netflix show. All right, so Connor, I am so excited to chat with you. It's been a hot second. How is life? Give us your elevator pitch.
Sure. So what I do, I have a few different titles within the shows that I work for. So Netflix Inc. is a large company, and I'm not, I don't work for them in perpetuity, but sort of de facto, I jump from show to show, from writer's room to writer's room, sort of just based on the people that I've worked with in the past and like the execs that I've worked with, and just sort of roll over. In those rooms, I'll do a few different jobs. I'll function as a script coordinator. I'll do freelance writing. I'll do one typically episode a season, and then I'll compose music and write lyrics when we need songs. All of those are like all different tax forms and like a very, make for a very unique recipe in the writer's room. That's very atypical. So I can speak to a lot of like the typical things in Netflix writer's rooms, but I can also speak to like, yeah, my hyper specific path.
So then what would you say is, I guess, like your niche in Netflix, right? Because it's not like you're doing Stranger Things. They don't have musical numbers in Stranger Things. So is there a genre you're in?
So yeah, I work in kids and family, multicam mostly at Netflix. And yeah, some of the shows are more musical heavy than others. I'm about to jump on one on Monday, actually, that I just accepted, called Julie and the Phantoms, which is a Kenny Ortega show. He did High School Musical and Descendants for Disney, and now he's over at Netflix doing this show. Season one will drop in the middle of the summer, but I'm coming on for season two, and that's a full musical show. So hopefully lots of opportunities to you know, pitch my songs for shows in the past that I've been on that aren't musical shows. I'll sort of just pitch to the showrunners directly. Showrunners are like the typically the head writers, executive producers who run the show. They're like the kingpins on any TV show, with like the, you know, equivalent of the, how the director is king and or queen in features and film movies. The head writer is king, queen in TV. So I can pitch to them directly in the room, and they can also go to, you know, composers outside. The series composer can write songs as well, but yeah, my sort of niche is having that in already, a seat at the table, and being able to sort of pitch directly from inside.
Cool. Well, so then, I mean, before we ask even how you start a show in general, how does one even get to kind of where you are? So like how?
Sure.
I feel so like it's not that, I mean, like maybe it's the very much, this is coming from a poli sci major who was like, I guess I'll just be a wedding planner. You know, all I know is like, I'm going to move to LA and I'll be discovered. Sure. But then that's like the actor realm of it. Right. So like, how does it even work to be a writer or any background part of it? Right.
Yeah. So I've just recently actually become like an adjunct professor at Notre Dame, teaching a class on writing the half hour TV comedy sample. And one of the, you know, first things I like to demystify is that, yeah, it's very much not the acting route of go out and waiting to be discovered. And that is also like, you know, pretty can be inaccurate. There are a lot of things that actors can do in order to like, you know, systematically attack their line of work and see like some tangible process without it being like as binary, but even more so for writers, I think, in that, you know, there is no one set path, but there's you know, a production route where you can get an entry level job as an office PA, a production assistant, where you're, you know, answering phones mm-hmm. and getting coffee and just going on runs. And, you know, my first PA job, I was working 15, 16 hour days for this $40 million Chinese feature. And then, you know, from there, you can become a showrunner's assistant, the executive assistant to the showrunners, mm-hmm. like their personal assistant. That could parlay, you know, you could also become a writer's PA, like the production assistant specifically for the writers. Either one of those could lead to becoming a writer's assistant, which is like sort of like the coveted,
like foot in the door job.
Step into a physical, because you're actually literally in the writer's room typing for the writers. Then the script coordinator will sort of, you know, run and organize the script department and, you know, make sure that everything's going out clean and to the right distros, the right distribution list, everything, everyone's, you know, when the 200, 300 person crew is getting what they're needing, like sort of liaison from the writers to the other producers and other departments. And yeah, so once you go from, you know, writer assistant to script coordinator, you can become a freelance writer when, if they, you know, offer you, you can earn a script on the show, your writing credits. So now I have, you know,
I looked you up on IMDb.
Yeah. So I've written a few, and then, you know, the next step from here is becoming a staffed writer where you, staff writer, you are, hired to write day in and day out and not just the one script that you work on. You're functioning at the table to like help with everyone's scripts and help all the rewrites. So that's like the next like big step for me personally.
Dang. Well, I mean, that's super interesting because like you said, it's not kind of like the glamorized Hollywood version of like how you make it big.
Sure.
It's definitely starting at the bottom somewhere. And then even if you do that, like there's no guarantees that that's going to be, you know, you're going to continue going up the ladder. Cool. So, I mean, absolutely. So now that you are part of it, you know, what does it look mm-hmm. like to, I mean, let's be all like, and this is the first 100 days, right? Like, so what does it look like to actually start a show, or is there even guess like something that even marks a beginning, or is it kind of like a blob of time?
There are definite demarcations. I think I'll start with the first 100 days of production. Like once a show gets greenlit and all the necessary entities are hired and like the team is there and sort of we're off to the races. Greenlit, and also if there's any words that are like random.
Oh, I got you. I know
lingo.
Nothing. I'll definitely ask the questions. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
No, flag me. That's one of the biggest barriers to entry out here is just sort of lack of like, you know, knowing this weird knowledge. You know, there's like, you know, codes for everything and slang for everything. And there's like even like a numerical code for like asking for a paperclip on set that's like
seriously?
Potentially really alienating to, yeah.
For a paperclip? For starters, people still use paperclips. Wow.
Yeah, there's helpful ones too. It's like, you know, it's there's some for like, you know, if like a lead in the show like needs to use bathroom, there's like a code for that, so you're not like yelling over the walkie-talkies that like, you know, private information. So there are some efficiencies to it, and there are some like big inefficiencies.
Wow,
to it,
that's so interesting.
Regardless.
Dang.
Yeah.
What a time. Yeah. What a time. But continue. Yeah, sorry.
Time to be alive. No, and there's also a different number code depending on the type of bathroom trip that is needed too.
What?
For like extra discretion. So everyone on set knows like how much time
they're actually
a vague window.
Wow. Yeah. You know, maybe that should just be something people put on their resumes, like can do number two in under 2 minutes. Thus the code can be the same. Wow. Fascinating. Wait, how is it even total tangent, but how is it even discretionary if everybody knows what the codes are?
Because everyone does not necessarily, and it like you can sort of it's like a like background chuffa, like
gotcha.
That if I'm hearing numbers or something, like no, like you're, it's sort of like if someone were to say your name or like a word you recognize that is strange, then you would flag it. But if it's just numbers, then there's a less chance of, you know, people.
Gotcha. You
know. And also just sounds more polite too.
Yeah.
This is now turning into the
right.
How to go to the bathroom.
Yeah. So when you start a show, it goes.
sure. It goes backing up a little bit, the creator of a show needs to sell it and sell a pitch and develop it. And get a pilot script ordered, and potentially, like, you know, there's other deliverables. They can have a series Bible ordered, but then eventually they will get greenlit, as in like the show will say, okay, we're going to fund the production of this pilot. That's how it was often, you know, with the big four network model with the ABC, NBC, Fox CBS. Now with like the over-the-top platforms, the SVOD services like Netflix, what you'll see a lot of the times is just straight to series orders, they call them. And so typically every show I've worked on has gotten a straight to series order for the first season. And when we then get going, we'll jump into what we call prep or writing weeks. And so the we'll have sort of 8 of these writing weeks, which are pretty essential in what we call banking scripts. So if we got for this show, Prince of Peoria, I worked on, which is this Netflix show that we wrote and produced in 2018. Over the course of that whole year, we got a 16 episode order, which got extended to 17, I believe. And so within those, 8 weeks of prep at the beginning of the 100 days, it's pretty essential that we bank as many scripts as possible, meaning like have them
ready to go,
ready to be read at the table read. So yeah. I'll get to like sort of that process a little later, but the prep weeks are sort of structured by the script coordinator often. So myself will like put together the schedule of like what deadlines we need to be hitting for each of our episodes, so we stay on track and we bank as much as possible. My goal is always to try to reach and bank 6 table drafts by the time we finish our 8 weeks, and sometimes it's 5.5. But regardless, we typically start out week one, those first 7 days, doing a room punch up or a punch and cut, a rewrite of the pilot script. So punches are like improving jokes, cuts are cutting mm-hmm. things in the script, and basically we're just trying to make the script as tight and funny as possible. And so even though the creators who might be the showrunners, if they're younger they might not, there might be like a more senior showrunner that's been hired to sort of oversee and run the room, which means basically like they have the final say in the writer's room of what goes on the page and what doesn't. But even though that pilot script that's been written by the creators has probably gone through extensive rewrites in the development process, we'll still do a room punch on it with all the the talented writers that they've hired and all the voices they respect. So that'll typically take a good chunk of that first week. We'll spend a lot of that week getting to know each other too. Writers' rooms are often very like hyper vulnerable places, and places where it's sort of free reign to share whatever, because any personal experience can be mined for story. So mm-hmm. it's the closer we are to each other, the better. We'll do icebreakers, and just shoot the shit. There's like a lot of sort of BSing that goes on within the room.
How many hours of the day do you think you're just shooting the shit versus like actually writing
sure. Dangerous question. It really does depend on who's
in the room,
who's running the show. Yeah, who's running and who, like how much time they spend outside of the room too, because often the showrunners are they're always the executive producers, and they have a lot of other meetings and things to do, and so they spend a lot of time outside of the room. But mm-hmm. If they're there and they're wanting to get work done, then yes. If they're gone, it's sort of like, dad and mom's away, so we can, have a little bit more fun while still meeting the deadlines. Exactly. There's a lot of junk food. There's also the big thing in production is that there's always, it's all free food, and then everyone just will gain 10 to 15 pounds in a room is the idea.
Dang, that's nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nuts. I try actively not to, but it's like there's the temptation abounds, and there's, it's like several free meals a day. You're always away at lunch. I haven't bought groceries actually in 4.5 years because I just eat. Yeah, I have zero groceries at home. I have protein powder, this random like Bengal spice tea that I like, and then I'll get ice cream.
That's what a fascinating life you have.
Right.
Wow. Oh, so this writing, these writing weeks are like, you would say that's in the, after the definite start of this like first 100 days, or is that even before?
Yes, this is, I'll start it here. I'll start it. The first, first 8 writing weeks would be the first 56 days are pretty important. And within there though, each week we have deliverables to hit. So like in that first week, we're we're punching up the pilot, but we're also, you know, talking broader stuff, blue sky, we call it, which is just like, you know, there's no such thing as a bad pitch. What do you guys, you know, think about the show? We have this Bible, but like, do you see any flaws in that? Where could we go in, you know, not just the season, but the series, like just like have these big macro discussions before we dive into the micro of each of these scripts. And just so like everyone's completely on the same page and very, very clear on who these characters are, what their voices are. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, there's, you know, production decisions of like, you know, the titles for the series and like the theme song and like stuff that, you know, that the showrunner can often handle on their own, but sometimes they'll want the room's voice on, and they'll have, the meetings about, with the head of costumes and the production designer, art designer of like, what the sets are going to look like. And that's all the helpful. We'll have, you know, put up blueprints all over the walls, so we know like where our characters are and what their entrances and exits look like, and sort of have a good visual for the world that we're, you know, starting from scratch. This is a specifically, a multicam season one show that we're having to start from scratch. And then, you know, getting into week two, we'll, you know, probably go through the Bible some more. Netflix likes to do things in drops where they, you know, will order a season but sort of drop it as two separate seasons, which is sort of like as a way to like
with
all the guilds, there's with all the guilds and unions, there are mandatory, you know, rate increases with season increases, and so it's like they function as two seasons, but you can still pay season
like
one
like it was season
rate.
One
exactly. Oh. Yeah, they're, I mean, and they do some very, there's a lot of inefficiencies in the industry for better or worse, and Netflix is a tech company first before they're a production company, and like they're able to, you know, optimize and trim and so they're able to put so much on because they can do it more efficiently than anybody else. Then we'll, you know, start to get into the different stages of deliverables for a script. So before like a show sees the light of day, before it even gets to the table read, we have to break it, what we call like figuring out what the episode even looks like, just, and that can take the form of just sort of like rogue notes that'll eventually be boiled down to like a log line, which is just like, you know, sort of a sentence or two describing the episode, or a paragraph, something that's pitchable to the execs that we'll be working sort of hand in hand with. The creative execs, or maybe the ones that have developed the show, maybe not, maybe their current execs, they call it, who get that the show's passed off to them, and they'll be the ones that need to like, you know, sign off on anything we do, ideally like agree with us. And so, you know, if they need the sort of blurbs ran by them, those can be pitched verbally or, you know, formally in writing, but regardless, we have to break a story, and then we have to turn in what's called a one pager or a one sheet, which is just like a one page prose description of the whole episode. And then once that gets approved, we have to do an outline or a beat sheet or a spine. And that is like a 3 to 7 or 8 page, also prose document that basically just breaks everything up into scenes, like what, before we get into the screenwriting format. And then, you know, that all gets signed off on. And each step of the way too, you know, we're getting notes from the execs, and we're having internal notes as well, and thoughts and developments and ruminations that we'll, you know, try to address to make sure that the story is as sound as possible before getting to, you know, the joke writing. The analogy is that, you know, it's a cake essentially, and we need to make sure like the, you know, the unsexy base layer of cake that isn't really going to be seen is like, yeah, is fully intact before you put like all the fun icing and frosting and candles and cherries, if you put cherries on top of cakes.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Dang. So that's all the like writing stuff. I mean, you haven't even gotten to like, does that cover all 8 weeks or not even?
So sort of, yeah. I mean, I can blast through it. You know, we'll given that tier, we'll basically be working on, you know, episodes 4 or 5 ahead of time with like those like infantile steps. But then, you know, we might be, you know, that second week I'm trying to nail down, the outline for 102, the nomenclature for episode naming is, you basically do, the last two digits represent the episode number and the first digit represents the season number. So like 101 means like the first episode of season one, 102, second episode of season one.
For those of us that all grew up on regular TV, we all remember that, but not the same with these streaming services things. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. So we'll do, prep the outline for 102 so we can write that in week three. Try to have work on our one sheet for 103 and break 104. And then in week three, we'll this is also specifically a show that room writes or group writes, which means every line of every episode is written together by committee in the writer's room, which has pros and cons, you can imagine. Pros being that everyone's on the same page and signing off on everything. Cons being that it can take perhaps significantly longer, that things can be little idiosyncrasies and eccentricities and people's specific writing styles can be rounded out to the lowest common denominator. So this is specifically for a show that is room writing. There, I've also been on shows where you send writers off to assignment, and that means they'll, once the outline has been approved, they take it and will go and do their first draft outside of the room, and which actually leads to us being able to get as much as we can done within the room when we're not having to spend 3 days to write something. So
I was gonna say how many writers are in the room. While it can be awesome to have group collaboration, eventually I was not very good at group projects because I was let's just be friends and chat.
Same. That's one of the it's fickle. I've been in rooms that have been as small as, five other people, but as large as 11, 12.
Oh my God. And how do you even come up with the seamless flow of anything? Wow.
I mean, you defer to, there's not a lot of conversational space to be had. And so there's sort of this unspoken thing that the highest level people are going to be talking most and the lowest level people are going to be talking the least. And there's certain, there's certain writing archetypes, there's folks that are, naturally more loud and extroverted and always pitching. And there's some that are more introverted and quiet. And then when, the former will keep the energy up, and then when the latter has something to say, people will typically pay attention because they don't talk very often. There are folks that are better at story, better at jokes, and ideally the showrunner is good at assembling this sort of weird super team. But you'd also break up the room into a pod, we call it, or a B room, where you can, if you've broken up an episode into an A story and B story, you can, that aren't really intersecting, you can essentially write them they're two separate scripts and weave them in later. And so that's a way to try to make things a little bit more efficient and have less cooks in the kitchen.
Dang. Okay, so then that kind of gets you through the writing part. So then what happens once, do you overlap filming with writing, or is it all the writing
absolutely
is done?
Oh, yeah. Nowhere near. So that's where stuff starts to hit the fan. When production starts, it definitely becomes a grind, because the machine of production will start to figuratively eat our scripts that we've been working so hard on, and we need to continually refill the hopper so that there's ammo
right.
And that's where the schedule becomes super important, just to have the foresight of being our time is going to become scarcer, because we're going to be devoting so many hours to the production of it and days to the production of it, that we really need to be hitting these deadlines so that we don't reach a bottleneck that necessitates us all staying till 4 a.m. So the production week, what that looks like is week after we've had our 8 weeks of prep, week 9 through 63 days, well, at Netflix at least, they're doing this model where they don't shoot the pilot episode first. They'll actually shoot episode 103 first.
Interesting.
And the idea there is that there have been inefficiencies with the pilot model, and that it's the first time the actors are all working together, the first time the director is working, everyone, it's all their first times. Mm-hmm. And And perhaps like that leads to some things that like should be course corrected. And if you're not doing Netflix isn't funding reshoots of pilots. They're wanting to get it right the first time they do it, but they don't want to, you know, risk alienating a viewer with like a subpar product in episode one. So to sort of account for that, they'll shoot 103 first. We'll take a hiatus week, and then they'll just to sort of like production hiatus. Production will be off, and the writers will still be going, but we'll discuss, you know, what worked, what didn't, what we need to work on. And then, you know, typically from there, we'll shoot. In Prince of Peoria, we shot 102, 104, 106 in three consecutive weeks, took another hiatus, and then shot the pilot, which would end the 100 days. So it's not until 100 days we actually shoot that pilot. Yeah.
No, I mean, I think that's kind of, well, it makes sense. I mean, you want people to get hooked right away, obviously, on a show. So if you don't want the first one to be kind of like, eh. Because I remember when I watched Gilmore Girls for the first time. Now this is going to be like the most obscure sort of reference ever. But the makeup for the grandma, for Emily, in the first episode was horrendous. And then by the second episode, she looked totally normal and like whatever, you know, what she was the whole rest of the season. And I remembered thinking like, what the heck? Like, this looks so, she just looked so bad. And so I can totally see that being a thing. Like, it just kind of looked meh. Like, she, you know, so.
Oh, and with that old model, too, that there's a chance that those episodes were shot months apart.
Wow.
And that, like, and like, especially with shooting with, you know, kids, and because I work with, you know, a lot of kids in family shows, like, you know, they can grow and change, like, pretty rapidly.
Right.
And so, yeah, it could be potentially jarring.
So does it, based on what you said, does the 100 days, is that like the whole season? Or I mean,
no, not at all.
That's like six episodes or seven episodes. So do you think that first 100 days like sets the tone, or do you think that's just kind of like, who knows, anything could happen after this?
It literally sets the tone of the show by virtue of us shooting the pilot at the end of it. Like that, the pilot episode of a show is, you know, is supposed to like basically do so much work in terms of laying pipe and establishing our location, our characters, what all their voices sound like, what their deals are, what their dynamics are, the look of the show, how it's lit, how it's shot, like the, you know, the camera movements that are established in the pilot episode of The Office are like are carried on throughout the whole show, and any directors that then, you know, episodically the show brings in uses the pilot as reference for their episode. So it looks like one cohesive product that has been, you know, directed by the same person, because they're like, you know, ideally, you know, each director puts their spin on it for sure, but it needs to look like it's the same show and shot the same way. And if you don't have that tone set, then you risk like a very disparate product that doesn't feel like one cohesive world and series, and then that's when the audience starts to like unsuspend their disbelief and like not want to hang out there because it doesn't feel like home.
There's so much stuff that I just did not think is involved in all this.
Yeah.
So I mean, now because you're saying that they reference the pilot so much, do they reference episode 3, are you saying, or do they still now reference episode 1?
It's a little backwards, but it's all function. So typically you'll hire a director to shoot 1, 2, and 3 so that that pilot director is working on finessing the tone. So it's the absolute best product for the pilot. And that, so it's like, you know, we'll refine, you know, taking a few lumps in 103, because if the audience is watching by then and they're already hooked and they're like, you know, a little bit more forgiving. But it's sort of all building towards the pilot, which is still, you know, pretty critical piece of storytelling, in this, you know, mass of, you know, there's over 500 original scripted series, and you know, there's how many shows have you watched where you just watched the first episode and not wanted to go past that? So there's a very much a heavy emphasis placed still on the pilot.
Wow. I'm like, actually, it's just so fascinating because this is stuff that like no one actually knows anything about unless like, sure. you know, unless you're actually in it, which even so, yeah. it seems like, I mean, could this be, is this pattern, I guess, I know you're talking specifically about Netflix, but do you think mm-hmm. this pattern of the writing and the executing and the production of it is similar for other writers and yeah, other definitely. TV shows? Or is this kind of more like, is this more definitely. Direct to Netflix?
Definitely for other streamers as well. So I imagine any OTT platform that would order things straight to series and right out of LA, which is the lion's share of multicam comedies, would so Hulu and Crackle as much, but CISO, I guess, when it was around, and Peacock will be. It's a lot of the same people that I know that are going to start working on the Peacock shows. And there's a
Wait, what's
Punky
Peacock?
Booster reboot. Peacock is did you guys know about that? It's NBC's streaming service.
Oh.
So everyone basically, it's basically like a cable redux, essentially, where the cable model is now being reborn in the form of streamers. And so you won't have channels essentially like you used to, but you'll have the channel like subscriptions to all of to if you want to get all the content you want. So The Wait. Office will be there eventually. Friends will be there eventually.
Oh, okay. Because I know that Friends got taken off of Netflix, but I didn't.
Correct.
I knew that it was because there was going to be another streaming service. I just didn't know that it mm-hmm. was called Peacock, and I didn't know that this was becoming more of a thing. Mm-hmm. The coast, you guys get that information first, and then it eventually makes its way over here into the Midwest.
We do.
And then
we
by
do.
Then,
how the internet works. It comes to
by
us.
By then, we're just on to something else.
Travels
yeah.
on the fiber optics way slower to you guys.
Yeah. Dang. Okay. So that makes, that makes sense. Okay. Well, so I just have so many questions. So with the writing and everything, how much longer then are you writing? Or I'm sorry, I'm just going to redo that question. Do you think that the most compact and crazy part of writing a show is in that beginning, first 100 days of everything? Or does it continue to be just as stressful, just as jam-packed? Or is that first part less stressful than any other part?
The first part is, at least the prep and the writing weeks are less stressful, but you need to, be wary that you don't rest on your laurels and slack during that, because you'll just be making, hell for yourself come production. It becomes definitely more and more stressful. So a production week, if you want me to tell you about what that looks like.
Yeah,
so if
it.
We were there, so week 9, if we're, shooting 103, up until then we've been banking table drafts, right? And these table drafts are read at what we call a table read, and we'll basically get all the actors and the writers and all the department heads and execs into this one big room, and the actors will sit at a table most of the time. Some shows I've worked on, we've done sort of a staged reading with makeshift props and sound effects, but that's very, very atypical. But for the 99% of shows, they sit around this table and read the script, and we as the production team are the audience, and we'll mark which jokes you're working, which ones need work, and then after that we'll have a notes meeting with the execs, and they'll tell us from their perspective what's working and what's not, what story-wise they're maybe not seeing or missing. And then from there, we'll go and do a rewrite that night. Let's say it's a Monday to Friday production week. The production weeks can vary. They can be from, Wednesday to Tuesday, or I've heard of even Friday to Thursday. But in multicam, it's typically a 5-day production week.
Well, because the kids got to go to school, so.
The kids go to school. We have an on-site tutor or tutors that will, there's typically always a classroom. And during the non-summer months, they have to, find ways to go to school. They'll have the AD, the assistant directors will schedule in when they have to go to school, but it'll be at all odd hours. They'll most likely all be in different grades with different curriculums and different classes, and so the tutors need to wrangle that and you know, make sure that these kids are meeting the legal amount of hours of schooling that they need to meet every day.
Dang. So then, okay, sorry. So you have that production week of Monday through Friday.
Yeah. So then that Monday night, we'll do our a rewrite from the table draft to turn it into what's called a revised table draft blue. And we call it such because it's printed on blue paper to make sure that no one confuses it with the white table draft. Mm-hmm. And so on this this first revised table draft blue, it'll be lined also with asterisks in the margins whenever we change something so that mm-hmm. yeah, the actors don't have to go back and read through all of the script. They can, and nor do the department heads, they can just see what the revisions are. Mm-hmm. And then the next day we'll go, you know, down to set, and you know, in Multicam, the writer's room, production office, and set are all very close to each other, typically on what we call lots, which are, you know, they're
Disney big spaces of land, and you have exactly. sets on them. Like yes, Ellen. It's like Ellen.
It's, you know, when in doubt, it's like Ellen.
Yeah, yeah. That's my biggest reference for anything sure. Hollywood. So, yep, keep going. Sure. Sorry.
my friend actually just submitted me to Ellen, fun fact.
What do you mean submitted you? What does that mean?
Yeah. No. To like guest on it. I don't know necessarily how it works. I don't actually watch what? Ellen. But
Well, it's during the day. It seems like you don't have time to do anything. So
this is true. I also don't have cable, so I watch everything.
That's fine. Yeah, that's right. A good plug for the job that you have. So
yeah, there you go.
Wow. Okay. Wow. So it, Ellen, to be a guest, that'd be fascinating. I hope.
Yeah, based on the elaborate best man speech at my friend's wedding. Yeah.
Oh, I will put that. I will, for everybody, I'm going to make show notes and I'm going to put that in the show notes. And if there's some sort of voting thing for Ellen, I don't know if that'll be a thing, but if that's a thing, I'll also put in the show notes, and that'll be great. I'll also plug this episode by being like, Connor as seen on Ellen on this episode of First 100 Days. Yeah.
Sure.
Cool. Well, so, okay. Sorry. Sure. So the lots.
We go to the stage. It's called On the Lot, and there'll be multiple, you know, anywhere from 10 to 20-ish stages typically, and your show can occupy multiple stages, you know, anywhere from typically 1 to 3. I don't know. I've seen bigger shows that have had up to 5, but so you go down to these sound stages, and within there will be these sets that the, you know, talented production designer and art department and construction and set decorators have all put together. And yeah, they're like these basically 3-walled sets that, you know, that you've seen on any sitcom. And there's a camera aisle in between, but they're typically lined on either side, like maximizing as much real estate as we have. We'll have like, you know, our standing sets, which are the ones that are always there. They're the, mm-hmm. so that brick and mortar doesn't leave. And then we'll have what we call our swing sets, which are like, just there for one episode at a time. Maybe they recur and we can block shoot it in such a way that we don't have to tear it down, but a lot of times they'll tear it down and then store it and then put it up whenever they need it, or they might never need it again and they can liquidate it. Mm-hmm. But we'll do what's called a producer's run through, where we'll basically run from set to set, based off the blue script. Basically they'll do like a stage play. They'll hold the script in their hand and they'll, they'll have been rehearsing all morning, going over the blocking, which is basically like, you know, where they're supposed to move about the set, and working mm-hmm. on their, you know, specific deliveries with the director. And then we'll come down, you know, after lunch, see the run through. It's just internal. We'll see with the producers. And then, based on that, because things can change when they get on their feet and the pacing changes, and, we'll do another rewrite that night to turn it into the second revised table draft pink, which is now printed on pink paper. Mm-hmm. And then we'll take the pink draft, and they'll, you know, Wednesday morning, rehearse it all morning. And then after lunch, the execs will come for what's called a network run through. And that's a big deal. That's like, you know, the network saw it at the table. Now they're going to see it on its feet for the first time. And yeah, they'll typically have, you know, a fair amount of notes for that run through, and then we'll take that, go back and do another rewrite to turn it into what's called a shooting draft. And mm-hmm. the shooting draft will be back on white paper, but it'll have what's called speech numbers, which are like these little numbers that go in front of each piece of dialogue so that they can efficiently call it out on set and know where we are.
Gotcha.
And then, yeah, then we'll typically on that Thursday do pre-shoots, which are like shooting anything that's like more difficult and cumbersome, that like is time consuming, or stunts, special effects, practical effects, things that require a lot of costume changes. And then Fridays,
shows? Like the in like family yeah, shows. Oh, yeah. Wow, I guess actually that makes sense. That's so Raven, I mean, had so many random things. So
exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Continue. I'm less. Yeah.
Sure.
Go ahead.
And then Fridays are our live shoots, and that's where we'll bring in, you know, a live studio audience like they have on Ellen, and they'll load in, I think 200 or so individuals. They'll get there at, you know, 4 or so. They'll have a warm up comic who is we have this guy Roger that we've been using for years, and he's been doing it for like, you know, 30 years, and he'll basically, like, his job is to keep the energy up in between this long, you know, hours long show that we'll put on for them. And then we'll screen for them the first episode, especially in a season one show where they will have never seen it before, or never even maybe even heard of the show. They'll watch episode one, so they have some context for characters and the arc, and then we'll then shoot the scenes that we did not pre-shoot on Thursday chronologically. And so we'll, the editors too, between Thursday and Friday, will have been pulling all-nighters, trying to piece together the best versions of some editing of the pre-shot clips, so that we can show those to the audience in between the scenes that we're going to shoot, so they have context.
So then during this week at all, when do you sleep? Or like how long are these days? I mean, you've said every single time, you're like, all right, and then we rewrite that at night, or these people have all-nighters. Like, are they, do you, I mean,
Sure. So the room starts at 10 in the morning, and we'll often get there at, you know, 9. And that's on, you know, days that we're not shooting. If we're shooting, typically everyone will be down on stage at 8. And then, shooting days are always sort of 12 hours. When we get into production, it's not uncommon for me to stay there from, you know, 9 in the morning until pretty often 10 at night. And then if it's like real crunch time, a lot of midnights, and then a lot of 2 a.m.s.
Okay, so this makes more sense as to why you've never bought groceries. Like, not even home to, you're not home to eat the food, right? So then, so then is that, I mean, how are people pulling those sorts of hours for the entire production of a show, or does it kind of peter off? And
sure. So what's nice about the production folks, the non-writers, is that they, the people that work down on stage, they are like, going. And it's their, that's honestly so tough. They're all on their feet the whole time. They don't get to rest in a writer's room. They, that's why they do the 3-on-1-off model. So they'll shoot 3 episodes consecutively, take one off, week completely off to do whatever they want. People will go on vacation, and they'll come back for like, this 3-on-1-off. For the writers, we try to make it as sustainable as possible, but you know, depending on the hours, it can sort of reach ahead where you like, it just feels like, it feels like camp at a certain point in time, and you just like you're there, and that's all you're doing, and it's all your bandwidth. And then you have your weekends, but you're sort of using them to recover. Or you know, I was when I realized I wouldn't have many weekday nights at this last show that I worked for, you know, you make the most of your weekends and go travel a bunch, and then come back to camp. But some shows don't, like, you know, there's, I've been on shows that I've gotten out at 6:30, 7 every day.
Okay.
And that's, maybe maybe you stay a little bit longer for production, but
can
be very same hours.
What about, I mean, I know that you do a lot of, I don't want to call them like extracurricular activities, but right? Like, I mean, I know you do a lot of your own like original work or original production, directing, you know, then when do you find the time for that?
Weekends and hiatuses. So what's nice is that we have hiatuses in between seasons. So when a show wraps, like, you know, the latest show that I work for is this one called The Expanding Universe of Ashley Garcia that'll be available on Netflix on the 17th of February.
It'll already be out by the time this episode airs, everybody. So
phenomenal. Yeah, it's fun. It's this Mario Lopez sitcom. It's cute and really funny. And it's sort of like the older sector of the kids and family demo, more like, you know, the Full House, Boy Meets World, TGIF demographic.
Oh, yeah.
So it's fun. And it's produced by Seth Kurland, who was a producer on Friends, and David Kendall, who was a showrunner of Boy Meets World. So, yeah, it's cool. I'm proud of it. I was grateful to be working on it. That wrapped, you know, week before Christmas. And so from then until, you know, this new room that I'm starting on Monday, I basically had all of the second half of December and then all of January off. And so you can,
gotcha.
you really want to take advantage of your hiatus time to, yeah, load your own personal hopper with the things you want to be, you know, working on and rewriting during the season. Yeah.
So then how long do most shows run for? Not like actually run on TV, right? But I mean, how long would you say it actually takes to go from the start to you've finished the last episode before you maybe do another season or the show's just done? Okay.
In like one season of content?
Yeah.
Sure. So it depends, you know, on the episode order. So like, you know, for a 16 episode order, when did we finish that?
Because no one's making August, like 22 episode season things anymore, right? Or is that?
Yeah, less so. They still are a network, you know, mm-hmm. They'll have those bigger orders. And then, you know, if a show knows it has gold in Kids and Family, then it'll maybe order like a massive later season. So that right before a big, so they can basically just bank, you know, multiple seasons worth of content at the lower season rate. So like Bunked on Disney Channel or Henry Danger on Nickelodeon will have, you know, 30, sometimes 40 episode season orders. And
what?
Just basically, yeah. So it's ludicrous. So they'll go, yeah, much, much longer. But when did we start? So we started Prince of Peoria, I think like February of 2018, and wrote until Labor Day. Yeah.
Okay. So your life sounds really hectic for a very long time. Okay, cool. Yeah.
It's go, cool. go, and then it's chill out, and then it's go, go, and then it's
That makes out. Sense as to why you would consider it camp, because that's what, yeah. I mean, that's kind of, yeah, that's what summer camp was. It was like craziness mm-hmm. for the entire summer, and then you just wait until summer rolls around again. Well, mm-hmm. dang. Well, thank you so much for giving us, honestly, even this sounds, okay, folks, this episode was supposed to be around 30 to 45 minutes, but there's just so much. This is sorry. Like 50 minutes long. No. I am so for it, because the thing is, like, I could ask a million more questions about like all that's involved. Sure. And so I think it's extremely fascinating to hear all the little bits and pieces of it. Even like, even though people could totally just visualize like, oh yeah, we sit in a room and we write things and like blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But like, I mean, and especially since TV in general is changing. You know, mm-hmm. it's so fascinating to understand how these streaming services do it. I mean, here's your time to plug all the shows that you're doing and even the extracurriculars you're doing. So, you know, spit them all out. It seems like you work on a million things at once. So
sure,
here's your time.
Yeah,
tell me all the things.
Sure. Real quick. The Healing Powers of Dude just dropped on Netflix a few weeks ago. That's the one about a boy with social anxiety disorder and his emotional support dog. It has Tom Everett Scott from That Thing You Do, and Steve Zahn is the voice of the dog, also from That Thing You Do, but you know Steve Zahn. And then Larissa Olyanic, who was Alex Mack, and she was in 10 Things I Hate About You. She plays the mom. That one's super cute. There's a young actress with muscular dystrophy named Sophie Kim that I got to write some songs for that I'm really proud of. The Expanding Universe of Ashley Garcia will be out on the 17th. I got to write the
17th of February?
Yeah, 17th of February. Yeah.
Out in March, so just want to be sure.
Yeah. Oh, gotcha. Yeah, the first 8 will drop in February, I think. Second 8 might drop in August. I have an Olympic special that I actually got to write with my brother, and that'll drop in August. And we had Mario guest starring on that one, along with Tia Mowry and Ava Longoria, which was really fun.
That's really fun. Wow.
Yeah, it was a blast. Theater-wise, we didn't really talk about that at all. That's a whole separate conversation. But I write musicals for folks with in plays too, for folks with cognitive disabilities, Down syndrome, autism, etc. And so I have one that just got financing to go into workshops out here called Coconut, that'll have like an LA premiere probably later in the year. Did one called Divorce, the hip-hop musical that I wrote back in 2016, premiered in 2017, will go off Broadway 2021, and then producing a bunch of one-person musicals, one of which I do is, it's called the one-man improvised musical that I make up an hour-long improvised narrative on the spot with an accompanist. And then that, along with these two other shows that I'm producing, one called One Hump Heart and one called Dear Jeff, a musical comedy about suicide and domestic abuse, will all go off Broadway at the end of March at Soho Playhouse. And then those will also all go to Edinburgh, Scotland in August.
And then you'll sleep when you're dead. My God.
Yep.
Wow. I'll well, this is extremely... Thank you so much for chatting with us. I mean, it's just a pleasure to always like catch up, but also learn about all the things you're doing. So, yeah, well, thanks for that. And episode done, I guess. Thanks for listening to this episode of First 100 Days. Original music by Dan Chmielinski. And feel free to tell your friends. Bye, y'all.